You're listening to episode 4 of the It's Not Real Magic podcast. This episode was recorded on July 10th, 2019 and published on July 14th, 2019. Welcome to It's Not Real Magic. The question of the day is, if you were a protagonist in a fictional story, what would the story be about? I'm Kevin, and I'm going to go ahead and answer this question to help prime the other hosts. So my story, I would be the protagonist in like a superhero story. So you know how in like the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, the Green Goblin sets up a scenario where the hero has to choose between saving his girlfriend or a cable car full of children? It would be something like that, where the hero has to sort of make this choice between somebody or something that's dear to him, or something that's sort of like in the abstract objective sense more valuable. Well, the way that goes down in the movie is Tobey Maguire takes a third option and saves them both. But in my story, the hero might like initially try to save them both, but he'll quickly realize that he's going to have to choose between one or the other. And this comes out about the halfway point in the story, and the rest of the story is him sort of dealing with the consequences of his choice. I'm not sure which way he would go on it, but you'd have to choose between one or two, and the sort of the getting over the guilt of this choice you had to make would be the sort of emotional crux of the rest of the movie.
That's rough.
I'm Alexander, and I do not have that long and interesting and well thought out answer. I would basically be the protagonist of a story of some disaster wreck of like an airplane or a ship or something, to where I am either the sole survivor or one of very, very few, like only one or two other people, maybe a lady, who knows. And it'd be about surviving in whatever environment, trying to get back to civilization, or maybe deciding, you know what, I like this new life. I've been reborn on this place, this wilderness, this island, or whatever it is. I'm going to live out the rest of my life here.
Like if Tom Hanks and Wilson just kind of chilled for the rest of the
movie. Yeah, it makes for a terrible movie, but an interesting story.
All right, my name is Jacob, and my fictional story where I'm the protagonist would be set in kind of the Rust Belt of America. I'd be kind of a young man, maybe in college, maybe just out of college, kind of trying to figure out what he wants to do with his life, probably working at his parents' appliance store or something like that. And I'd be asked to play in a band because someone was sick, and we hit it big with one song. We played local shows, and then we eventually kind of got on the radio and made a movie about it. And at the end, I realized that the woman that I loved was actually the lead singer's girlfriend, and it wasn't until they broke up that I realized we were meant to be together.
This is the best podcast I've ever heard. I am Lucas, and I don't have a well-thought-out answer, but I think if I were a protagonist in a story, it would be a redemption story, like a redemption arc. So like the main character would start out as kind of a crappy guy, and then by the end of the course of the movie, he's had some sort of redemption arc where he sort of comes out the other side, a better man.
Wait, I'm confused. So which Tom Hanks movie are you referencing?
Wasn't really going for a Tom Hanks.
Oh, I see. Because I was like, man, you guys were just establishing a pattern there, and I was hoping you'd cap it out, and I would still get to be the odd man out, but that didn't happen. So thank you for not making me the weirdo.
Cold War spies in Soviet Russia. There you go.
There you go.
So, Kevin, would you have Tom Hanks play your character in your story?
I can't see Tom Hanks being a superhero. The man can do many things, but superhero is not really one of them, I don't think.
Oh, I don't know. I think he is a superhero. He's Tom freaking Hanks.
He's America's superhero.
It's Captain Phillips, but Captain Phillips is actually Superman.
Mm. It's Captain Phillips, but in a plane, and nobody dies.
See, Kevin, I think your story idea would probably be the one that wins the Oscar, because it's about a tragedy and like very artfully done and like very dark and catches the critic's eye.
I've never seen Sophie's Choice, but it sounds similar to what I know about Sophie's Choice.
I'm not familiar with Sophie's Choice. I might have to go look that up after this podcast.
Yeah, and I think I could try and explain what I know, but I'm probably actually wrong, so I'm not even going to go any further with that.
Well, do you have anything you do want to go in with?
I had some questions that I don't necessarily need answers, but I'm curious as to where you guys come out on a few of these things. So I ran into this situation with my chiropractor, because my chiropractor says, okay, we'll see you in a month. And that left me with this question of, at the receptionist, how long is a month? What are you guys' thoughts? Because I have a number of different ways of how I would determine how long a month is. So I'm curious as to, when you hear the phrase, how long is a month? What's the answer?
30.5 days.
It's a fiscal period in accounting.
There you go.
And how long is a fiscal period in accounting?
A month.
So how do you determine where that month starts and stops?
The first through the last day of the month.
So it's just simply a moving period of days.
It could be so 28, 29, 30, or 31.
Okay. If somebody says, like today, hey, let's do such and such a month from today, when does that happen?
4 weeks.
August 10th.
So you would say August 10th. Jake would say 4 weeks, which would actually be what, like August 8th or something like that? So I guess what I'm getting at is a month is multiple periods of time that are all called the same thing.
Well, yeah, like in the case of your chiropractor, I'm sure it was an estimate. They want to see people approximately every 4 weeks and not, you must be back here in precisely a month or else back will never work again. I'm sure for them it's a much more loose period of time.
So here's,
for scheduling purposes.
Here's what you do if you want to define a month is a fairly consistent way of doing it is you just choose the same like Xth day on the Yth week. So, you know, the second Wednesday of the month or the, you know, first Friday of the month.
I'm sorry. The Xth day on the Yth week. What?
I was tracking.
You got an interesting calendar, brother. I want to see this thing.
Oh.
Because my weeks are not labeled that way.
So my next thing is you just do what I do. And when you're creating your own little fantasy world, you make your own calendar. And in that, you have a 10-month year and a 5-week month and a 6-day week. So every month is exactly 30 days. Exactly 300 days in a year.
Wow.
It is a wonderful thing. And then you come up with fictional names for all the days of the week. And none of the other people who you've talked to about this actually care about it. But it's fine.
I mean, I care when my character's birthday is.
So you're creating your own. You're creating your own like time space continuum in your story, in addition to a lot of emotional drama.
Right, but the nice thing about creating your own time space continuum is that you can actually just make things make sense.
You are going to need comic relief in that story. I will tell you this right now because it sounds pretty heavy.
Oh, this is two separate stories.
Here's the solution to your dear question, Alex. You just have to answer the question, how much is a time, and then count a month's worth of those.
That's it.
Well, I think this moment has lasted long enough.
Gotcha.
So then the next question is, how long is a moment?
Gosh, that's hard because I want to say like in a moment, in a twinkling of an eye, like it would be a singular nanosecond. But then on the flip side of that, I just thought if someone says, oh, give me a moment, they don't mean give me a nanosecond.
Mm-hmm. No, but if somebody says, give me a second, they don't literally mean give me a second.
That too.
So, go on.
I guess I feel like a moment is long enough for you to make a decision. Because when I think about moments, I think about, what if I had done something different in this moment?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, when I had this decision to make, and I had a little time to think about it, and I went this direction. So, a few seconds, I guess?
Okay, here's how I would define it. A moment is to a second as a second is to the blink of an eye.
What? So, now here's the thing. If it was if it was either of my other brothers making that statement, I know they would just be goofing, but I know you're probably serious.
So here's what it is, right? The blink of an eye is like, I want to say like a third of a second.
Okay.
So a second is three blinks of an eye. And so by the same relationship, a moment would be 3 seconds long. That is how long a moment is. You know it's right because I said so.
According to Wikipedia, a moment is 90 seconds. It was a medieval unit of time.
That's just boring.
You're welcome.
That's not fun if you go to the history books. That's cheating.
I'm not asking Wikipedia. I'm asking you.
We're asking
Rob. I would say like my wedding day was a special moment. And so that's 24 hours.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't say your wedding day was made up of multiple special moments?
The whole thing was great.
Yeah. I was exhausted and I looked terrible.
This is about me, not you.
No, Alex, you looked great. Don't worry. You were great. We all loved you on your wedding.
I don't even remember my wedding day.
It's hard to remember the future, isn't it?
It is.
I don't know. A moment's about as long as a bit.
Okay.
Like, hey, so, when's dinner? It'll be ready in a bit. Okay.
It's an unacceptable answer, but...
So again, I feel like a moment is a fluctuating period of time depending on the situation, much like a month. My wife said that it is basically the amount of time in which you have a memory. So like,
that's a good answer.
When our child expounds for the first time, you remember that moment, which is only just a very brief instant. But sometimes there's things that last longer than that, but you're still creating a memory, like a wedding day or whatnot. So I thought that was a really good answer.
You know, I'm changing my definition to your wife's definition because that's a really good definition.
That's a good definition.
I got a smart wife. All right. Well, I only had a few of these questions, leading us into the next one, which is, how many is a few?
So this one I actually thought about.
Oh, good! Finally, you thought about an answer to a question. This is
success. Thank you. Kevin, you can enter the cheering chorus audio clip right now. Like, yay!
Can we timestamp this thing and get it notarized? I want this on my wall.
So I believe a few, many people refer to three or more as a few, but I think a few is in relation to the larger group. For instance, if you say, I'm going to go out with a few friends, it's probably three, right? Three or four. But if, let's say, you're on some industrial line, you're making bolts or something or nuts, and you spill some and you spill a dozen or 20 of them, but your bin, it has thousands in it, you spilled a few. So I think it's always in relation to a larger group.
So it's a percentage. Roughly what percentage of the larger group would it be?
A small percentage.
So now I'm going to have the question of how much is a small.
Could you, is a moment so, long enough to spill a few nuts and bolts?
So
if you do it every month.
Or if you remember it.
It's true. No. Yes. So my definition of a few would be similar to Jacob's. Except I would go, it would be based on like significance rather than proportion. So to me, a few is small enough that you don't concern yourself with the specific, you don't concern yourself with the fact that it exists. Towards like, if I was eating grapes and I spilled a few grapes, I'd be like, oh, whatever. Spilled a few grapes, fine. But once you actually spill enough, that's like, oh no, I've lost some grapes. That's like, now I've actually depleted my amount of grapes enough that I've noticed it.
That, so would that be these are several? Missing. Like, is several more than a few?
So to me, several is a more absolute unit. Like, several is like between like 3 and 7, maybe up to 9. But if you, like, you know, like Jake was saying, if you have a bucket of bolts, if you spill a few, that's going to be a lot more than several. But if I'm eating like salsa and chips and the bag tips and I spill out a few chips, that's also probably going to be several chips.
That's called a tragedy.
All right. So if somebody says, I'll be there in a few minutes, how many minutes do you think that they're talking about?
5 or less.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So to me, here's what a few minutes. A few minutes is by the time you would ask the question again of how long are you going to be, they will have finished.
Hmm.
If you have to ask it a second time, then it's been more than a few minutes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think this has been a few minutes. So I think I have time for one more of these random questions that aren't so random. How long is a long drive?
300 yards.
Ha! Dad joke.
As I was saying that, I was thinking, gosh, somebody could go to the golf course with this question if they wanted to, but hopefully they won't and they're mature enough. But I was totally wrong.
To be fair, Jacob is now allowed a double portion of dad jokes per day.
Correct.
Than he was a week ago.
That's true. You have twice as many proportions as I do now. That's just wrong.
He can utter a few more dad jokes per day.
Exactly. You know, that means, it means that he doesn't have to have the high quality ones like he just did, because he has so many more he can shoot out there. He can hit or miss. Whereas I got to nail mine.
You got to pick and choose, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's really hard to do.
Pretty sure you spent yours before we started recording too, didn't you?
Oh, probably.
It's a bummer.
But anyway, back to my usurped question. How long is a long drive?
I'll give you an actual answer to that, although I'm sort of shooting from the hip here because I haven't thought about this a ton. But I think this is probably going to be like proportional to the amount of driving that you usually do. So like for you would not consider my drive between Grand Rapids and Kalamazoo a long drive. I would not consider it a long drive, but Lucas might consider it a long drive because he doesn't go traipsing all over the state.
Mm-hmm.
And so like what I would consider a long drive would probably, you know, over an hour. Whereas, you know, maybe for like somebody else, that's like, oh, that's just down the block.
Yep. So my question to your question is, are there children in the car?
I was going to say the actual answer that I'm going for is proportional to the number of infants and proportional to the number of infants states of happiness as to how long a long drive is. Because a 5-minute drive can be a really long drive. Or a 5-hour drive can be just a drive.
There's so many factors here, because I was also thinking it depends on the objective of the drive. Like, if you're buying a $20 something off of Craigslist and you got to drive an hour and a half there and an hour and a half back just to get this thing that you paid $20 for, that's a long way to go to pick up an end table.
I'm still not sure why you like that end table so much.
Are you kidding me? This is solid mahogany.
It's got so much character, though. I'm just going to sand it and paint it. It's going to be beautiful.
I would say a long drive is probably over 3 hours because you probably would want to stop at a 3-hour mark.
Mm-hmm.
So you're driving longer than what you would normally do in one drive.
So really anything longer than you would do in a single shot. So that might that might vary for sort of different people. Like, I could go for 6, 7, 8 hours straight and like, okay, fine, the vehicle needs gas, we'll stop. You know, and it's like, yeah, whatever. Whereas some people are like, I really don't want to be on the road for more than like 2 hours at a time before I stop for something.
Yeah, I think we talked about this a little bit when Kevin talked about road trips last week or a couple weeks ago.
Or months.
Months. It's definitely going to vary from person to person. Like, for me, it's about 5 hours. I can go about 5 hours before it's like, okay, I should stop driving now. Let someone else take the wheel. So my answer would be 5 hours, but it's going to be totally relative.
And part of it may depend on how much sleep you have or have not had, because I know for me, like, a long drive gets a lot shorter if I'm tired.
So I would like to introduce the next topic, which is not necessarily sleep deprivation, but just going without sleep for an extended period of time and what it does to the human body, specifically maybe your body, and how you've dealt with that in the past, or maybe some funny stories you have about having a lack of sleep, right?
Mm-hmm.
So kind of my first question to go out there is, how long have you gone in a single stretch without sleeping? You know, how many hours or days? And I would be willing to modify if you have an answer that's, you know, it was a 3 or 4 day stretch, but you only had a very limited number of hours of sleep. So that's my question to the group.
Well, I know for me, I can't remember the specific instance, and I've been trying to rack my brain things inside my head, but I'm pretty sure there was a point where I was probably up for 36 to 48 hours straight, I want to say. I'm trying to remember what specifically I was doing. I don't remember if it was like a drive through the night thing and then stayed up the whole next day once I got to the destination, or if it was a got up, went to work, went home, played video games all night because a new game had come out, worked the whole next day, and still played that video game a bit into the evening until I finally crashed before I had to go to work. Could be either one of those two things. As far as what it does to me, I find there's a point where there's like this window where when you get tired, you will fall asleep very easily. And once you get through that particular window, it almost seems like your body has a hard time falling asleep at that point, to where you're almost like, gosh, I feel more awake than I did like 2 hours ago. Okay, I guess I'll just stay awake. Almost like you kind of like round this corner, crest the mountain or whatnot. And then at that point, that will last for, that can last sometimes for a long time, where it's like, you know what? I think I'm just going to stay awake. Yeah, I'm just going to stay awake and sleep tomorrow kind of thing. So that kind of has that effect for me. Doesn't really work when I'm driving, because generally you can't quite make it through that window of, hey, my body's telling me I need to sleep right now and still stay on the road. But for like working, gaming, you know, whatever else I might be doing, I find that if you can power through that window, you can stay awake a whole nother day.
Doughboy or Kevin?
Yes. Yeah, I'm with you, because I remember in college doing some, I did like a couple all-nighters where it was, well, I didn't do my homework and it's finals tomorrow, so I'm going to stay up all night getting my homework finished and doing a little bit of studying, and then you just go right to class. And I get into class, I'm like, wait, I've been up for like 24 hours. Why am I not falling asleep right now? And then, you know, you go, you take the exam and you come home and you go about your day, and then you eventually hit this wall to where your body's just like, yeah, no, you're sleeping now. Good night.
Do you think that was adrenaline?
Maybe. I haven't studied the physiology of sleep to any great extent, but it does almost feel like your body gets to a point where it's like, okay, if you need to stay up this late, it must be something serious, so we're going to kick you into high gear for a little while.
Hmm.
Yeah, the human body's capable of some pretty amazing things. And I think there definitely is a part of, like, your brain knows that this final is important. So it will make you stay up so that you can complete this final. I think I've done 24 hours before. The only time I can think is due to video games. Like, playing video games, and then it's midnight, and then it's 2 in the morning, and then it's 4 in the morning, and then, oh shoot, the sun's coming up. Well, I guess I'll go to work now. There have been those times. As far as what it does to me, I can think of 3 effects. The first is I'll be goofy when I'm staying up that late.
Mm-hmm.
The second is my eyes will start to blur, and I'll have to blink away the blurriness, which is annoying. And then the third is when I am sleep deprived, I would like to think that I generally let a lot of things roll off my back and I don't get offended very easily. When I am sleep deprived, little things that I would just let roll off my back just like sit in my craw and annoy the crap out of me. And I know it's because I'm tired, but it's still just all these little things like, oh, why you gotta do that way? And oh, I wish you wouldn't say that, which normally I wouldn't give a second thought to.
I don't understand. I get too tired to care. The other thing the other thing I've noticed about staying up late is that if I try and remedy that with caffeine, I go from being tired to being tired and also shaky. So 32 ounces of Monster is not a substitute for 8 hours of sleep, in case you're wondering.
Amen.
So as far as sleep deprivation for me, there's probably some LAN parties that was up for quite a long time. The two that I'm thinking about, just because we had a child last week, is kind of around the birth of children. So when Wyatt was born, I think I had like 4 hours of sleep and like a 48-hour stretch, something like that. And so I was just exhausted at the end of that. Or the times that I was sleeping during those 4 hours, it was like sitting in a chair sleeping. So it was not restful sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of what spurred this question, this podcast, was Sunday night. Hudson woke up in the middle of the night and just needed to be calmed down. And so I picked him up and I was walking him around the house and I was so tired. I could not keep my eyes open. I was like bumping into furniture as I was walking past it. Like I couldn't navigate my way through the house because I was just stumbling. So I was so tired. And I knew if I sat down or laid down, I would fall right asleep. And so I had to stay upright. Otherwise, I would have, you know, dropped the kid or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, so sleep deprivation just makes me really sleepy. And which is kind of an oxymoron. That's kind of what spurred this question.
It's funny because I've seen your eldest son do the same thing. When he gets tired, he kind of bumbles around and bumps into stuff. So I guess it's...
He's also 2 years old. I think that comes with the territory, whether he's awake or not.
Well, yes. It's still funny to me that that trait is...
Father like son.
Basically become like drunk tired is almost what you're talking about. Oh, yeah. I just kind of stumble around and bump into things.
Yeah. And I don't know. I have found since I've been married and had kids, like, I am able to fall asleep at the drop of a hat. If there's ever a situation where I have to be up for a long period of time, usually I've got 20-minute naps in there somewhere because I can do that. I can fall asleep that quickly. So I think the days of staying up for long periods of time are kind of gone, but definitely taking quick, short naps, I guess.
So what you're saying is if I want to cure my insomnia, reproduce.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, we could generalize that.
Because then there's going to be times when you want to sleep, but you can't. And so then... your body will always be able to sleep when it can.
I think there was also a time during like the peak of my back injury where I couldn't sleep. It just hurt too much to sleep. And so I was like, well, I might as well try and go move myself into a position to do something else. And so I think I was up for a while on that one just because my normal sleeping pattern was disrupted so heavily because sleep was not much of a thing that was going to happen at that point because just it hurt to lay down, which I don't know about you guys, but I need to sleep in the particular position in order to sleep. Like, I can't fall asleep on my back or, like, sitting up in a chair.
I can't fall asleep on my stomach. That's not
bad. Oh, that's the best.
Nope.
The problem is it messes with my neck.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You get onto your stomach and you just kind of like, oh, I'm in the cloud, and just kind of gone. And then you regret it as soon as you wake up, but you can't turn your head back straight.
If I ever fall asleep on my stomach, I wake up with a painful neck and also with drool all over my pillow. This feels really good, but also my mouth shouldn't be this wet.
More things than I wanted to know.
Oh, I'm just chock full. So speaking of things that you didn't want to know, has anybody here fallen asleep while driving?
Yes.
Maybe your head like drops down your chest and you snap awake. I've definitely done that.
Have you ever been like, man, I can't remember the past 5 miles?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't far from home, so I pushed through, but man, that's a weird feeling. Don't do that, kids.
I think driving back from Chicago sometimes late at night, I would stop and take 2 or 3 naps on the 3-hour drive back because I could not stay awake.
Okay, so moving on without any sort of fancy segue because it's for noobs. I wanted to talk about work ethic. I don't really know why, except, I don't know, I guess it was just on my mind. So we all grew up in the same household. We all have the same parents. So we all got like the same sort of exposure to work ethic, as exemplified by our mother and father. And I would imagine they tried to instill a work ethic in all of us that probably took in varying amounts from person to person. So my opening discussion question is going to be, how has your work ethic developed over the years?
Well, I've carried a number of different jobs over the years, and I think I probably learned something about work ethic in each of them that I've tried to then apply to the next one. And some of that is simply, I would say probably at this point, I'm much better of a self-starter. So when you think of work ethic, I think of some of that self-starts and like continues to work without continually being told what to do next and how to do it. They figure things out on their own and they have a pretty good idea of what's next and they just start doing what's next without having to be pointed in that direction. And if they're doing it wrong, I'm sure somebody who's supposed to point them in the correct direction will be like, no, we're not ready to do that yet. Go ahead and go do this over here. So that's something I think I've had to develop because I really wasn't much of a self-starter through most of my 20s, mid-20s, maybe late 20s. And so I think for me, that's changed quite a bit over having different jobs and learning from my experiences in them.
Just quickly thinking about this question, I would say my work ethic has increased over the years as more and more responsibility has increased. So when I was living at home, my work ethic was not that great. As I got in high school and college and I had to become more self-sufficient, my work ethic increased because there's expectations in college to meet. And then as I moved out of my parents' house and had my own job, work ethic increased again. Then having a wife and children, work ethic, it becomes more and more instilled. And like Alex said, self-starter saying, okay, what do I need to do to get X thing done? I'm going to go do it because no one else is going to do it and people are counting on me to do it. So that's my quick 5-second thought.
I need to get X thing done by wife day.
Yes, X thing done by wife day.
Man, I only have a few moments to do this, and so...
And if I take a month to do it, I'll probably get fired.
That's true. So when I first entered the working world, I think my concept of work ethic was a very frenzied, you have to be working all the time, you have to be doing something constantly, you can't stop for a moment because your time belongs to your employer while you're clocked in, and you know, I felt that sort of responsibility to always be doing something, which I think is fine. As I've gotten older, I have realized you don't have to be manic about it, but definitely you want to be productive with all your time while you are being paid. I'm a very big fan of lists, so almost every day I'll be working off of some sort of list that I made for myself. These are the things I need to get done today or this week or whatever. I, for a long time, have been very bad at the things that I least want to do will stay on the list the longest, and I'll do everything else around them, avoiding this one thing that I don't really want to do. I'm trying to get a little better at that. Still have some progress to make. I also happen to be in a position of management, so part of my work ethic has evolved to delegation and being able to say, you know what, I don't have to do everything and I'm not supposed to do everything, so I'm going to hand out some tasks to some people, which that's been a learning experience. And again, something that sometimes I forget and I just try to do everything myself. And eventually something will happen that makes me go, you know what, I should use my resources.
Yeah, I was very similar to that as well. So I spent several years managing. So I did some management at Menards, and then I did some management, quite a bit of management, at the Ford dealership where I worked at. And I almost feel like now being an electrical apprentice, that my work ethic has dropped off because now I'm in the learning stage. And so I don't feel like I show up and I get the most out of my day because I'm trying to learn as I'm going. So I'm not being as efficient, and I feel like I'm more lazy because I'm trying to figure stuff out. Whereas when I was managing, it's like, all right, I know what needs to be done. Do this, do this, do this, do this, have this person do this, have this person do this. And I felt like I had a great work ethic and was very efficient and very valuable to my employer, to where now there's times where it's like, all right, I just got to think on this for a couple of minutes and try and figure this thing out. And I just feel lazy at that point. So I almost wonder if work ethic more so is determined by what you're doing, bringing value to your employer, as opposed to constantly being busy or constantly not being busy, but as far as helping your employer make money in whatever it is you're doing. Because in some trades and whatnot, maybe you do need to be constantly moving and doing something in order to be valuable. And other ones, it's like, no, I need you to take some time on this and do it right the first time. Even if it seems like you're just standing around thinking, that's fine, because you're going to do this once, and that's the most valuable thing to me.
So to kind of summarize, see if you guys agree with this, there's quantity and there's quality. And when we were younger in our jobs, we had a lot of quantity, but not a lot of quality. And as we've gotten older and matured, that is tipped. And now quantity is less relevant and quality is more important.
Mm-hmm. It's certainly more valuable, I think.
I guess I'm taking work ethic more as like the attitude towards work. Although all the points...
Well, we went somewhere before, totally different than you wanted us to go.
I mean, all the points raised before are perfectly valid. Because sort of the way I was going at this when I was thinking about this before the show was, like, my work ethic, I feel like, has gone down over the years. Like, when I first went to college, I was not get out of class, you know, do all the exercises and all the textbooks and do all the homework 2 weeks before sort of guy. But I always did the homework. I always showed up to class. And I feel that as time goes on, my drive to actually do the things I'm supposed to continues to decline. And I just continue to get frustrated and I begin to care less. And it feels like that's...
I wonder if you're in a government job.
You know, some days. No. No, it's not a government job.
I think, Kevin, also that's learning to do what's important. So, like, doing every single question in a textbook, yes, you may learn the material really, really, really well, but it's not the most effective use of time, and it may not be as important in the long run. And so, you know, as you shift a little bit, you go, okay, these things are important in my life or in my job, and so I'm going to push my resources towards those, get those done, and maybe not feel like I have to do everything.
I guess that's fair. I don't know. I feel like my attitude towards work just in general has not been optimistic as of late. And again, like you guys said, like you had the thing of when I was younger, I didn't have as good of a work ethic as I do now. And I'm like, yes, you're not necessarily working in the same way that you did before, but your desire to do a good job is still there. It's just the means by which you do that good job have changed.
Robinson lacking optimism. Boy, oh boy, I didn't think I'd ever hear the day about that.
No, I will say, I only spoke about my work ethic at my job. My work ethic at home is pretty trash. I tend to be pretty lazy at home. So
I agree.
Make me a sandwich.
Wait, did I say that out loud?
My wife is nodding next to me, so my work ethic at home is not so great.
What is there to do at your home? Like, I mean, there's not that much at this point. You don't have like a kid to take care of or a dog to do anything with.
Or even a house to maintain.
Well, I mean, I still have to do laundry and vacuum the floor and not just play video games all the time. So
those things take like, what, 4 minutes to throw a load of laundry in and maybe 5 minutes to vacuum the floor. And then maybe 2 minutes to transfer it. And then once you do with it, once it's clean, I mean, well, that's between you and your wardrobe. But it's not like you have like a lawn to take care of or anything like that.
Yes, those things do not take that long when you do them. But when you procrastinate them, they end up taking all night.
It's true. Also, like, that's like 11 minutes. That's like half of a Risk of Rain run. Like, man, you can't.
Exactly.
Can't let that go.
I could watch a YouTube video with that time.
Wow.
Okay.
Brother, if you ever buy a house. Oh.
Oh, it's going to be a wake up call.
It's going to be I have a song I should post in chat. No. I'm going to move this topic along because I do have one more question. This is probably going to be fairly similar for all of us, but I'm interested to see where this goes, which is, where do you derive your work ethic from? And I'm going to try and rephrase this in a way that probably makes a little bit more sense. Like, why do you care about doing a good job?
I was asked this in a job interview one time, and this is the first thing that came to my mind, and I think it's probably still the one I'm going to go with. And the question wasn't necessarily what's your work ethic, it was like, what motivates you? And my answer was fear of failure. Now, I can say that I got that just through the way that I was raised or my own social anxieties or desires to please people or whatnot. But the reason that I'm working hard to make sure I show up on time and or early and, you know, learn well and do a quality job and whatnot is because I don't want to fail. I don't want that feeling of failure, and the fear of that coming into my mind and my experience again pushes me to whatever I need to do so that I don't feel that again.
Well, there's your protagonist story, man. No, I feel you though. Anybody else?
That's a good answer. I agree with that. I would say, you know, work ethic comes from wanting to provide for my family.
Also true.
And see them. I mean, stuff is stuff, but so that's not the end goal. But for them to be able to live a comfortable, happy life, I guess.
I mean,
and that
stuff is stuff, but a house is still a house and food is still food.
Yes. So, I mean, work ethic of why am I getting up at 7 a.m. to go do this job or something? Or why am I staying up late to refinish the bathroom or something like that? It's because I want my family to feel comfortable and loved, I guess. And I think that's how I show it to them.
So it's a means of blessing your family, essentially.
Yes. I feel like if I did not work or got fired from my job because I was not showing up on time or not doing my job, like, I guess it goes back to fear of failure. I would be failing my family. Mm-hmm. But I don't look at it as a fear of failure. I look at it as how do I provide my family? And that's why work ethic comes.
Also, I would be bored as all get out if I didn't work, because I experienced that during like the back injury and just being off the week that we had Ember. Of being home and just not having anything to do, I go crazy. So I keep working hard because I need to. Otherwise, I will go insane. But go ahead, Lucas.
I'm going to go out on a limb and be like brutally honest. I think, yes, fear of failure for me, but it goes further than that to a place I know is not healthy, but it's where I am. So I'm just going to not be in denial to self-worth, where if I am doing a good job in life, and at my job and with my wife and I'm doing everything pretty well, I like myself. And when I am failing at those things, my self-worth goes down and I don't value myself.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's fair.
So much of our identity as people in the workplace is who you are in the workplace and how you're known in that environment or even outside of that environment. So much of your identity is tied up into whatever your career is, if you have a career.
I have to be very careful with, I like to have tangible and measurable goals or tests for, am I doing a good job? Like if we reached this percent profit, like that's your target. If you're above that, good job. If you're below that, bad job. Like I like to have that concrete thing that I can look at and say, yes, I'm doing a good job. I have to be very careful with that, because if I look at that concrete thing and it shows me, no, I'm doing a bad job, you know, that's a bad, dangerous place for me to be. And I have to be careful when I see, oh, I didn't reach whatever objective I was meant to reach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I sort of follow along similar lines. When I was younger, when all of us were younger, we were all taught math by our father. And I remember I was doing, I believe it was my algebra homework. And I submitted something, it was wrong, so Dad handed it back to me, and I updated it, and I hand it back to him, and it was still wrong, so he hands it back to me, and I update it, and I'm just doing like a very half-effort job on this math homework. And so I hand it back to him. I think it like eventually turned out to be sort of right enough. And when he hands it back to me, he points at it and sort of says like, I don't remember the specific words that he said. But the paraphrase of it was essentially like, this work that you turn in is like a reflection of you.
Mm.
And so that didn't really like click with me until much later in life. Whether it should have clicked the way it did is a different debate. But ultimately, the end effect is that I now sort of derive my identity not even from the way I work, but from the results of my work. Towards like, I do, like my work ethic comes from, I want to have something at the end of the day to sort of show that, yes, I am a good person. And that's sort of why I work. And if I'm in a scenario where I don't feel I'm going to get that, I find my work ethic falls off drastically, because it's like, well, if I try, I'm still not gonna have anything to show for it, so why do I bother trying? Because I'm just gonna be a failure either way.
And you don't want to fail.
Don't want to fail. I fear failure, man. It's how we roll.
And I've struggled with that in my own life, because like once I knew it's like fear failure is the motivation, is that really the motivation I want to have, or should it be a positive pursuit of success as opposed to trying to avoid the negative? Should it be just trying to reach for the positive? And I guess maybe just my mental makeup can't quite do that. Or maybe I'm just hard enough on myself that's like, even if I achieve that, I'm still not, you know, happily motivated by achieving that. I don't know. Because it still seems like fear is always this way stronger element.
That's fair. I sort of wish that I didn't even have to, like, consider what motivates my work ethic. I just sort of wish I just had it. It's like, why do you do this? Well, because it's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Unless anybody has anything to weigh in on that topic, that's about all I really wanted to go over. Just a brief honest discussion.
That was a good topic. It's very thought-provoking. I like introspective questions, just because that's kind of how I'm wired.
Like, what's at the very bottom of your belly button?
It's called navel gazing.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I can't even see into mine. Like, I'm even shining a light down there and wiggle it around.
I can't even see mine at this point.
You gotta get one of those cameras they use for like surgeries on the
just get pregnant camera. And somewhere around the sixth or seventh month, that thing basically goes flush, and in some cases pops out a little bit.
Alex, if you figure out how to get pregnant, you will be a scientific marvel.
Yeah. Also, thanks for taking the TMI ball from me. Glad to have that look off my back.
If you take a Q-tip and clean out your belly button, whatever you do, don't sniff it.
Oh, jeez. Okay. We're going to change subjects now to my subject that I have prepared for us.
I mean, he's right, though.
Podcast with my three brothers. For my topic, I've decided I want to play a little game. It will require a little bit of instruction. You guys all know how to play, but playing it over the internet will just take some explaining. So if you have your Discord app open that we use to record, and you right-click on my name, you can press the message button, and it'll open a private chat with me. You're going to need that, because we are going to play the Game of Things.
Oh, gosh. Oh, dear.
So what I'm going to do, you guys all know how to play. I'm going to read the first prompt, and while you are typing and sending your answers to me privately, so that you don't see each other's answers, I'll briefly explain the rules for anyone who hasn't played in a long time or has never played. So your first prompt, the game of things monsters do in your closet while waiting to scare you. Things that monsters do in your closet while waiting to scare you. So as they type their answers, I'll explain briefly the game of things. I read a prompt. Each of my brothers will privately message me their answer to that prompt, and I will read out their answers in a random order, not explaining whose answers is whose. I will also throw an answer in there. We will then go in age order, and my brothers will try to match up who wrote which answer among the three of them. Mine is just in there as a wild card to throw them off. They're not supposed to guess me. So when you guys are ready, send me your answer for things monsters do in your closet while waiting to scare you. I also have to come up with an answer.
My answer is submitted.
My answer is submitted, even though I'm not very happy with it.
I'm so glad I don't have to manually trim the silence on these. I just have an effect that does it for me.
That's very handy. I have to think of my own answer to throw in here to try and mess you guys up.
So basically, the answer that sounds like it's not very well thought out is going to be Lucas's.
Coach.
I mean, I'm trying to figure out why he didn't have his answers prepared already, because he already knew the questions.
That's what you think.
Well, yeah, that would require preparing for this podcast.
Exactly. Okay, we're now ready to play the game of things monsters do in your closet while waiting to scare you. Number one is practice making scary shadows. Spike their hair. 2319. I've been informed that that answer is supposed to be read 2319. By the judges. Thank you, judges. And the final fourth answer, try to piece together a door from the wood chipper. The first guess is to Alexander as to which answer belongs to which person.
So I'm only trying to guess Kevin and Jacob.
Correct. Right? Do not guess mine or you lose.
Also, do not guess yours or you lose.
Okay. I guess, what's the number one?
2319.
I'm going to say that's Kevin.
Incorrect. It goes to Jacob for the next guess.
Who was the judge that had to inform you that it wasn't 2319?
That would be my wife.
Oh, see, I was thinking. Never mind.
You thought someone, whoever wrote it, messaged me and said, it's 2319, you idiot.
Maybe.
No. No, my wife fills that role very well.
So I'm going to go, Alexander, you are they spike their hair.
No.
Right. We made it all the way to Kevin to guess.
Jacob, are you make hand shadow puppets?
No.
Wow, you guys are bad at this game. We're all the way back around to Alex. I will read off real quick things monsters do while they're waiting in the closet to scare you. Practice making scary shadows. Spike their hair. 2319. Try to piece together a door from the wood chipper.
Kevin, are you a wood chipper?
I'm not a wood chipper.
Damn.
Nor do I play one on TV.
Alexander, are you the wood chipper one?
No, but I see what you did there. And yes, I would do something like that. But no, I did not this time.
Are you, Alex, are you 2319?
No.
I'm not 2319. You guys have done every guess. Except the correct one at this stage.
Alexander needs to run the table here, apparently.
Yeah, but I'm still confused.
This is hard to play online.
I have no social cues to go on.
So this means what, Jacob, you're 2319?
Correct.
Okay, then that would mean, Kevin, you spike the hair?
Yep.
Hey, and Alex does the clean sweep. That took a long time to get to.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
Are you ready for the next round of the Game of Things?
I don't know if I'm ready. Go ahead.
We'll try to do a little better this time. We're now playing the Game of Things You Won't Ever Give Up. Things You Will Not Ever Give Up.
Give up?
Give up.
Give a? Spell it for me.
G-I-V-E space U-P.
Things I'll never give up. Okay, gotcha. Or just read the question one more time.
Things you hold bitterness in your heart towards your brother for. Asking too many questions.
Oh. Gets things I'll never give up.
You like ice cream or podcasting with my brothers. Yep.
That's a very wholesome answer. Not really one that I would expect from this particular group.
Being sarcastic. I'm giving you guys great options here. I'm giving you some great options. My answer's in, so I can say whatever I want now. And Lucas, you better not be looking at answers before you give an answer.
No, in lieu of Kevin's criticism, I have started to look at the next question ahead of time.
Ah, well,
right at my answer.
There we go. That's fine. Criticism works. Yes!
Well, Lucas has a fear of failure on the next question.
I have so many ideas, but they're all so inappropriate. I know children listen to this podcast.
You know, I told the mother of those children that I may not keep it PG, and I like to keep my options open.
Don't phrase it that way, but...
Well, I mean...
Hey, I don't keep it PG, so just, you're warned.
Look, we all have parents that can guide us. That's parental guidance. Okay, the answers are all in, finally. Things... You won't ever give up. The Ghost, Rick Astley Music,
mm-hmm.
My Wife, and Music. So we've got two for Music. One is specifically Rick Astley, The Ghost, and My Wife. We will go first again to Alex.
I shouldn't get to go first again. Somebody else should get to go first.
But you won the last round.
Oh. Well then, Kevin, are you Music? Just regular Music?
Regular Music, sir.
Okay. What were the other three?
We have The Ghost,
mm-hmm.
Rick Astley Music,
mm-hmm.
and My Wife.
Jacob, I'm going to say Your Wife.
What about My Wife?
You're never going to give her up.
You're correct.
You're never going to let her down. Never going to run around.
And I'm not going to desert her.
Amen.
Alex sweeps the table again. We'll start the next round on Heaven. Make it a little more fair. Are you ready for your next prompt?
Bring it on.
You are now playing the game of things that you are paranoid about. The things that just keep you up at night. The things you are paranoid about. This could be a great many things.
Things you're paranoid.
Fear of failure, perhaps?
Mm,
good question.
Ooh, much quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
On this one, we have... we know what we're paranoid about. We don't know what we won't give up, but we know what we're paranoid about. Okay, we have... Things you are paranoid about. The 2020 election. Losing at podcast games. What if I am not elect?
Ooh.
And that I won't get X'th done by Wife Day.
that's a good one. There you go.
It will go first to Kevin this time.
I get skipped every time.
This is the beauty of being the middle child.
I think Alex would be the guy who would throw in that X'd by Wife Day with the understanding that everybody else has already ribbed on me for it. So he's trying to dodge suspicion by putting that in and making me think it's somebody else.
Nope, not me. So it goes to...
It goes up to Jacob. You're going reverse order.
Okay. Kevin, you're the... what if I'm not elect?
Correct.
Alex, you are losing podcast games.
I hate losing podcast games.
And Jacob sweeps the table under the rug. A very impressive feat.
Thank you.
And I think that's all the time I had for my section. So thus concludes the game of things.
For the record, I won 4-2, and I did not lose the podcast games.